Okay, case number two, Gary Hellman versus Steve Smeltzley. Hi, Mr. Myers. How are you?
Okay, Your Honor, for the second time this week.
I was thinking so courageous came back.
I love Chicago.
It's us you love.
Yes, I stand corrected. Please, the court, counsel. My name is Christopher C. Myers. I represent the appellant, Gary Hellman. And today he contests the summary judgment that was entered on behalf of the Indiana State Trooper defendants on his Section 1983 claim. With respect to the Heck issue, plaintiff maintains that his Section 1983 claim does not invalidate his guilty plea. He also contends that it was error for the district court to grant summary judgment on the issue of qualified immunity.
Okay, well, you're going to have to tell us why you think that the fact that the police began shooting before Hellman reached for his gun is inconsistent with the plea. And so, you know, because in order to avoid a Heck dismissal, I think we need to limit our consideration to the claim that the police used excessive force in detonating the flash bang device.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. In fact, the district court usually engages in an analysis of the relationship between the acts of deadly force and the guilty plea, the admissions at the guilty plea hearing. And so let me start with that. At the guilty plea hearing, the trial court judge basically asked very conclusory questions. There were no details requested. There was no blow-by-blow analysis made. There was no time sequence of events. There was no timeline. Basically, there was just a question, which was, were you guilty of resisting? And during the course of you resisting, did you attempt to draw a weapon?
But here's the problem. After a six-hour standoff, darkness must have been approaching because now it's 6 p.m. at night in April. Why would it be unreasonable for police to use a flashbang device to attempt, to distract him so that an arrest could be accomplished outside rather than the more dangerous situation presented by an armed person who's barricaded inside?
Yes, Judge. First, with respect to the comment that darkness was approaching, Your Honor, I don't think that there was any issue raised in the record at all regarding inability to see or getting too dark. I know the court is not going to engage in inferences that seemingly favor the defendant. But with respect to why it was unreasonable for the Indiana State Police officers to use a flashbang device, it's because it made the situation more dangerous. And police officers cannot bootstrap themselves into immunity by creating the very danger to which they respond with acts of unreasonable and deadly force. And that's what happened here. That's exactly what happened here.
Would other forms of distraction be permissible under your theory?
Hypothetically, yes, Your Honor. I think that other forms of distraction might be appropriate so long as they did not cause a more dangerous Mr. Hellman.
Like what? Like what? Like a circus coming by? Or mm-hmm. No, really.
Your Honor. Not a circus coming by.
What would distract?
Well, Your Honor, for example, there were snipers in the trees. Okay, perhaps noise from some of them, perhaps a bullhorn, perhaps anything, okay, other than making the situation more chaotic, which produced the very deadly force to which these officers responded by shooting Mr. Hellman.
Okay. The fact that Hellman gets outside creates an extraordinary opportunity for the police, right?
Well, of course. But he had been outside, in and out, all day.
They were pretty patient.
They were extremely patient. So were they required to allow him to go back inside the house?
No, I don't know if they were required to allow him to go back in the house.
And he's not. I got to ask a couple of quick questions. What was he wanted for? And why wasn't he just surrendering? He's lucky to be alive.
Your Honor, of course. I believe that he was wanted for some child support matters. I think that was what the warrant was being served
mm-hmm.
for. Okay.
And child support, he was so adamant that he was willing to get into an armed standoff with police officers.
Your Honor, I am not here defending the reasonableness of my client with respect to causing this disturbance with the police. And, mm-hmm. and I know very well that, and I'm not trying to excuse that, but I am here contending that Heck does not bar his claim. What the trial judge has to do in the criminal case is, if it is the trial judge's job, to develop enough of a factual basis such that maintenance of the 1983 claim cannot be reconciled.
Is it safe to say that the criminal conviction necessarily implies that his attempt to draw his weapon was unlawful? That's what made it a felony, right?
Yes, sir. I believe that's probably correct.
If it was merely, as you are now arguing, an instinctive response to unlawfully unreasonable use of force by the police, how could his attempt to draw his weapon have been unlawful?
Because the attempt to draw his weapon occurred after he was shot.
No.
Okay.
If that's true, then how could it be unlawful? He admitted in the criminal case to unlawfully attempting to draw his weapon.
Right.
If he was responding to unlawful, unreasonable force by the police, how could his attempt to draw his own weapon be unlawful?
Because I still think, Your Honor, somebody who's been shot and laying on the ground, as the police approach, and even though that person was shot, they're obviously very defiant, I still suppose that his reaching for his weapon could still be considered unlawful. Because at that point in time, the officers, having already shot Mr. Hellman, they are lawfully approaching him. And so his reaching for his weapon instinctively at that time still could be considered unlawful.
Is there any factual basis for this in his affidavit
Absolutely
or otherwise?
Absolutely there's facts. Your Honor, let's see here. In his facts, he absolutely contends that he reach for his weapon, if he did at all, after he was shot.
No, after they began shooting.
Hellman further explained that he was not reaching for his weapon at any time prior to the flashbang grenade going off and made no attempt to draw his weapon until after the flashbang grenade went off and after the officer started shooting him. At least I cited his affidavit at paragraph 3, which was in the appendix at page 10.
Yeah, but that shooting at and being hit are different things. I'm still struggling with how his drawing his gun, or attempting to draw it, could be unlawful, given the factual basis that you've described.
And, Your Honor, the only thing I can say is that even a suspect who's been shot and laying on the ground, it's probably unlawful for him to try and get his weapon, okay, as police officers approach.
Can you deal with the qualified immunity and why it's not appropriate? Because even if Hellman only reached for his gun after the flashbang device went off, isn't there ample room for the officers to defend themselves and their fellow officers when threatened?
No. And, Your Honor, that gets back to the series of cases that I set forth in my brief regarding when police officers respond to a state-created danger, a danger that they themselves create, and the suspect reacts, causing the officers to use deadly force.
Did they have to wait for him to shoot first?
No. Well, Your Honor, Under the facts of this case, he didn't even have the weapon in his hand. Okay,
he's a split second away from it.
Well, Your Honor, again, I think that's a jury question, but we do know this. This is an established fact in the record. When Mr. Hellman was on the ground, bleeding from the gunshot wounds from the Indiana State police officers, his gun was still holstered.
Sure, but how much longer did they have to wait?
Your Honor, I don't know that they had to do it at all, because remember, our facts are that Mr. Hellman was not engaged in trying to reach for his weapon at all, other than after being shot. That's what precipitated Mr. Hellman reaching for his weapon. And getting back to your...
Where do you get that out of his affidavit? I don't understand. I would have thought that if his theory is what you're saying now, that he had already been hit by fire. How many times was he hit?
I want to say five or six, just, but I'm not positive.
That he didn't try to draw until after he had been hit by five or six police bullets. That's not in this affidavit.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know that he lists how many times he had been shot.
He doesn't say he had been hit before he started. He says it was an instinctive reaction to the shooting.
Well, Your Honor, I assume that when the shooting happens, some of the police
often miss. Seriously.
I know, but again, that's an inference that may be established at trial on behalf of the defendant.
Well, I'm looking, it seems to me like the kind of, if this is the theory for avoiding heck, I don't see it in your affidavit. I've said that, I'll not
okay.
belabor the point.
All right. But getting back to the question of qualified immunity, again, police officers can't create the very danger to which they have to respond with deadly force. And I think the cases are pretty clear on that, a state of, and you're, the Toms versus Boyd case, and then there's a case out of the 11th Circuit, I believe it's Gilmer. So, I believe I'm going to reserve some time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Bradley.
May it please the Court. My name is Kathy Bradley, and I am here representing the state defendants. This court is correct that heck would bar Mr. Hellman's lawsuit based on his facts that he did not attempt to draw his weapon until after the officers began shooting at him.
I'm longing to know what the effect of a flashbang device is. I mean, is it meant to momentarily stun the person so that he can't act? Is it meant to distract?
It's my understanding, Your Honor, that it is a device that does exactly what it describes. They pull a pin, they toss it a ways, and then it has a flash of fire and a big bang. And I think its whole purpose is that it is to distract someone and disorient someone.
And aren't there any written guidelines or protocols that establish for the police, when it's proper to use a flashbang?
I'm not entirely sure, Your Honor.
Are there any known risks to its use?
I think if you actually throw it at someone and it detonates, right, it hits them and detonates or detonates right near them, I think it probably could be a problem. I think there was a case out of this circuit, Escobedo, where it was found to be a problem because the officers had thrown tear gas into the apartment prior to the flashbang, and so it set a fire. And then also they threw a second flashbang, and I believe that it detonated right near the plaintiff victim. So I think there is some harm that could occur from them. But here in this case, there's no allegation that Hellman was harmed or that it was thrown so close to him that he was harmed by this. Going back to Heck and his factual allegations that he did not attempt to draw his weapon until after the officer started shooting at him, under Indiana law, where an officer is unconstitutionally using excessive force and an individual responds in kind and his response is not disproportionate to that of the officer, he cannot be guilty of resisting law enforcement. Here, if as Hellman
claims. Could you remind us of the case law on that?
Yeah, it's Schultz v. State. It's in my brief. I do not have the actual site. If, as Hellman claims here, the officers were shooting at him for no reason and prior to the time that he attempted to draw his weapon, then he would not be guilty of resisting law enforcement. His factual allegations in his complaint, in his deposition, and then later in his affidavit all are inconsistent with his guilty plea for resisting law enforcement as a D felony in Indiana.
So what about counsel's point that the district court didn't go blow by blow, step by step in terms of the guilty plea and just got that brief answer?
Well, I still think that, you know, under Indiana law, if the officers are using excessive force, I don't think that it changes the analysis that they didn't go through a blow by blow. I mean, if, as he says, it's true that they were shooting at him, then there's just no possible way that he could have been guilty of that offense. So I think to survive Heck in this case, what Mr. Hellman had to plead and admit was that he knowingly and intentionally resisted by attempting to draw his weapon. And it was only at that time when he attempted to draw his weapons that the officers respond, and that force was excessive in response to him drawing the weapon. And I don't think that he could survive here if that was the allegations either, because I think it was reasonable for the officers to respond with deadly force when they saw Hellman attempting to draw his weapon. In response to counsel's arguments that the flashbang made the situation more dangerous and therefore the officers created the need to use deadly force, this court has rejected the proposition that the Fourth Amendment prohibits creating unreasonably dangerous circumstances in which to effect a legal arrest. But even aside from that, I don't think it's the officers here by using the flashbang that made it more dangerous. I think it's Mr. Hellman who made the situation more dangerous. He knew when the officers arrived. The evidence shows that his brother was outside. The officers told his brother, "We have arrest warrants for your brother. Please go in the house and tell him to come out and give himself up." His brother went into the house, said he told him, and Hellman said, "No, I'm not going out." An hour or so later, when he finally went out to talk to the officers, he went out with a weapon, at that time with a loaded weapon, and admitted that he had a loaded weapon. The officer's affidavit shows that they tried to convince him to peacefully surrender, and the officer's affidavit also said that they were unable to persuade him to voluntarily disarm. So when he came out 6 hours later, the officers had implemented this plan to use a flashbang, but only after they believed that they were no longer going to be able to get him to voluntarily disarm and to surrender peacefully. That's when they decided to use the flashbang, and they were only going to use it to distract him. Now, if Mr. Hellman had actually voluntarily disarmed, we might not have this issue when he went out the second time. He knows officers are there. He knows they're there to arrest him. He knows they've asked him to voluntarily disarm, but yet he still goes out to confront them the second time 6 hours later with a loaded weapon. And it was after they set off the flashbang device. The evidence is that Mr. Hellman turned, saw the emergency response team, dropped the items in his hand, and attempted to draw his weapon. And it was only at that time that the officers began to fire. It seems to me that a reasonable person faced with this situation, such as Mr. Hellman, if he's turned around after the flashbang device, even if it scared him, if he turned around and saw police officers with their weapons drawn, at this point, it doesn't make any sense why he didn't put his hands up and just say, "I surrender." There was no basis for him attempting to pull his weapon at this point. So therefore, the officer's actions were reasonable in this case, and there was no unconstitutional violation in this case.
Ms. Bradley, could you address this theory that he was attempting to draw after he had already been hit by police officer shots?
I have never seen that in this case before, but even if those are the facts, I don't know how he gets around the fact that under Indiana law, the officers can't use excessive force. And in this case, if they've just started shooting at him for no apparent reason, and he hasn't attempted to draw his weapon prior to that, I don't know how that wouldn't be considered excessive force. And so even if he, you know, didn't attempt to draw his weapon until afterwards, I don't know how he could be guilty of resisting, even under those facts.
Under a recent decision of this court, people who live within this circuit, including people in Indiana, have a Second Amendment right. Most people do, anyway, have a Second Amendment right to carry firearms in public. And here we're talking about also Mr. Hellman's own property. And I'm wrestling with how that might affect dynamics as we look at police-civilian encounters like this, where police need to be cautious under any circumstances, but where many people they encounter can lawfully be armed. I don't have a specific question, but I wonder if you might address how that may affect these dynamics.
Well, certainly I think in this case, you know, he had initially had the right to be carrying that handgun. As far as I know, he had a permit for it. But I guess I'm not sure I'm going to entirely answer your question in this case. But I think in this case, even though he had the lawful right to be there, I think the officers were cautious with him. I think they were very cautious. I think when he came out, they saw that he had a loaded weapon. You know, they didn't try to attack him at that point. They tried to negotiate here with him, you know, to get a peaceful arrest. So
would they have been entitled under the Constitution to demand that he drop the gun, and if he did not, then to fire?
I think so, if they have an arrest warrant, if they are there to arrest him. I think they could ask him to, I'm not sure of that, honestly, but that is my guess, that they could have asked him to disarm. Anyway, the district court granted summary judgment on several bases in this case, and it was proper to do so, and the state defendants respectfully request that you affirm that decision.
Thank you very much. Mr. Myers, you used up all your time, but we used it up. So if you have something, come on up, and I'll give you a couple of minutes. Sure.
Thank you, counsel. What you heard, by and large, from counsel would be an excellent argument to a jury as to why Mr. Hellman acted unreasonably. The reason why we are here today is because this case was bounced out primarily because of Heck. And again, when we have such a hazy record in the criminal guilty plea hearing, when there's been no kind of time sequence of events, what happened first, what happened next, I just don't think that Heck can apply.
Could you address the Schultz point about,
well,
which is has to do with a person's right to defend himself and not be guilty of obstruction?
Yes, Your Honor. What we're saying, Judge, is that at the moment in time that the police officers approached Mr. Hellman, when he had already been on the ground and he had already been shot, at that point in time, when he went for his weapon, okay, that still could be considered unlawful conduct. And that is not inconsistent with his Section 1983 claim. And that is what Heck directly gets to. There has to be a very strong inconsistency between the 1983 claim and that to which the client pleads guilty in the criminal case.
Are we ever permitted to engage in a gun battle with police? I've wanted to, but
Your Honor, I think that the answer has to be yes, and here's why. If the police are acting unreasonably, and if they are using unreasonable force, okay, if you've got, for example, a couple of police officers who are rogue officers, and they start shooting, I think that absolutely a citizen can meet that force with equal opposing force.
Up until you view things, you know, the way you view them, do you think these police officers had acted roguishly or unconstitutionally or...
The answer to your first question is no. I don't think they were operating as rogues, but I do think they acted with deliberate indifference to my client's constitutional rights because they created the very danger not which they justify their use of deadly force. And we can't do that.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you to both of you. The case will be taken under advisement.
Thank you.